All right, guys, welcome back to another episode of the League Express podcast. My name's Jake Keenan, and joining me as always is the editor of League Express, Martin Sadler. And Martin, it's round one. How exciting.
Oh, of course it's exciting. Round one of Super League. Not of the Challenge Cup. We've just had round three of the Challenge Cup, Jake, so that's something we'll probably talk about as well. But yeah, you know, the start of the season is always a fantastic time, isn't it? We've been through a pretty horrible winter, as we normally do. It's been a mixture of cold, wet and darkness, you know. How you tolerate it as an Aussie, I'm not quite so sure. But but this weekend, it's the start of the Super League competition, and it all starts at Hull on Thursday night with a Hull derby. What better way to start the Super League this year?
Are you a fan of having that game as a standalone season opener?
Very much so. You know, if you're going to have a season opener, you want it, and it's obviously going to be televised by Sky, you want the game to be played in front of a full stadium, or virtually full stadium, with loads of atmosphere, and hopefully, you know, with a very close result. Now, obviously, the first two of those, I think, are pretty guaranteed. It's going to be nearly full. It's going to be a great atmosphere, as it always is in the Hull derby. Will it be a close game? Well, let's hope so. I mean, obviously, last time they met at Hull's home, it was 40-0 to Hull KR last Good Friday. Well, with respect, we don't really want that again, do we?
Yeah, that's right.
You know, we want a game that hopefully is decided in the last few minutes, so let's hope we can get one.
No, absolutely. Extra time even.
That'd be great, yes. Absolutely.
Yeah, awesome. And we've had a lot happening this week, or I guess last week, you could say. We had the Super League season launch. You went to a dinner on the same
yes,
day as Sky.
Yes, well, the How Super League launch, ready to roll. That's the headline in this week's League Express, with all the 12 players from the 12 different clubs on the front cover. So that's worth getting. Yes, it's interesting that Sky Sports held a dinner in Manchester last Thursday night to, and I think the main purpose of it was to present their new commentators. Because they're going to televise every game, of course, they're recruiting several new commentators, including Dave Woods from the BBC and Mark Jones, who's worked with them before, who does a very good job. So, and it was great, and I was delighted when I got there to find that I was all the tables were allocated with name tags and so on, and I was really quite pleased, Jake, to see that they'd put me next to Jenna Brooks. And that was a delight, obviously. Mm. And Sam Tompkins, I was between those two. So it's, yeah, you know, great to be sat between them. And, I mean, Jenna's, I've got to say, I admire Jenna's work on Sky. I think the great thing about Jenna on Sky as a sideline commentator is that she's got a very charming manner. She's full of positivity for Rugby League, you know, and I mean, I've met her before, obviously, but in private as much as in public, she's a very positive person, a pleasure to sit next to. So, you know, that was it makes for a great night if you're lucky enough to be sat next to her. And Sam, of course, some very interesting things that he has to say about the game as a whole and about Catalan Dragons, some of which were said privately, so I can't repeat them all, obviously, but a great guy, and he's going to be part of the Sky team as well this year as a pundit, and he's a very, very perceptive guy. So I think it's going to be a good year on Sky, hopefully, and we'll see how all that works out and how they allocate matches to the team that they've got, because of course this Friday they've got three matches taking place concurrently that they're going to broadcast. So it's going to be very interesting to see which commentators get which games, won't it? I think.
No, absolutely. And I'd have to say that's probably the best seat in the house, wouldn't you think? There's probably a few other pundits you could probably sit yourself next to, but I'd be picking the brain of Sam Tompkins and Jenna.
Absolutely, yeah.
No, that's awesome, mate. But speaking of some of the new coverage that we're going to see this year, it's finally been announced that the BBC are set to broadcast 15 games, I believe, this season, and that's just the Super League games. They're also going to continue their coverage of the Challenge Cup, but that deal is a three-year deal, I believe.
It is, and they'll have the World Club Challenge, yes, which obviously that's going to be that's a massive thing for Rugby League, because that game's already been sold out, And to go out live on the BBC on the Saturday evening is going to be absolutely fantastic, isn't it, really? Mm. A tremendous coup for the game, I think. And, you know, a massive audience is going to see that that match, hopefully with Wigan winning it, of course. I mean, the only thing that makes me a little bit sort of ambivalent about it is this Saturday, when the very first game that the BBC will broadcast will be from Castleford. And I love Castleford, but the Castleford ground is not necessarily, you know, the best ground to show on TV as the first game in this new deal. Having said that, it's always atmospheric. It's always it's always a tremendous game at Castleford, actually. And, you know, it's amazing how many great games come from Castleford. So although the stadium doesn't look great at the moment, and obviously they've got planning permission now to, or they're on the verge of planning permission to redevelop it, which will be, something we can all look forward to. Mm. It's going to be an interesting game on Saturday, and they're playing Wigan. And it's very hard to imagine anything other than a comfortable Wigan win. Mm. I don't think it's going to be an evenly contested game, unfortunately. And I hope I'm wrong. I hope Castleford do give Wigan a great game and, you know, take them all the way. But it's hard to imagine it somehow.
Yeah, you have to feel for Castleford and the London Broncos, who have both drawn the short straw, you could say,
yes,
with the two top contenders.
Well, absolutely. London Broncos going to St Helens on the opening night. I mean, whoever creates the fixtures obviously doesn't like them, does he?
Yeah,
to give them a trip to St Helens on the first Friday night of the new season, particularly when they're piling up injuries already in pre-season. Mm. You know, my goodness, what a shame that is for them, and what an incredible job awaits them at the Totally Wicked Stadium on Friday night.
No, absolutely. And there was some other broadcasting news coming out of France. Now, there's been a deal secured between Catlin's Dragons and I believe they're called the L'Equipe or L'Equipe?
L'Equipe.
Oh,
you're displaying your ignorance of French sport there, Jake, because L'Equipe is the national newspaper for sport in France. L'Equipe, it's a very famous newspaper for people who live in France and for people who take notice of what's happening in France. But they've now got a broadcasting arm, and they're going to be the ones who will broadcast the Catalans games. And that's a real coup for the Catalans and for Super League. And I think that deal's been negotiated by AMG. Mm. So that's showing, IMG are showing their... I mean, I've questioned IMG's worth to Rugby League in the recent past, but if they've negotiated that deal, and there won't be any money in it, I don't think, but nonetheless, the exposure that the Catalans will get will be tremendous for Rugby League in France. And the real pity of it is that Toulouse are not also in Super League, so that both clubs could be featured in that coverage.
Mm. Yeah, it's obviously great exposure, and every home and away game is obviously advantage. So yeah, a bit disappointing Toulouse can't capitalise as well, but who knows, we might see them in Super League next year if they can keep their grading up.
Yeah, well indeed, yes, who knows.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, there was an interesting article our reporter Stephen Ibeetson had in this week's edition of the League Express newspaper with Ryan Brearley, and Ryan was sort of talking about the state of the game, its future growth potential, and he also made an interesting comment in that article that sort of caught my eye, Martin. He mentioned that when they had their open media day at the Trafford Centre a few weeks back, there was a lot of people coming up to him and sort of mentioning that they didn't even know who the Salford Red Devils were.
Isn't that incredible?
Existed,
yeah.
Which is mind-baffling for
the Salford Stadium is less than a mile from the Trafford Centre. And of course, the Trafford Centre draws people from a very wide area. But for people to not know who Salford Red Devils are tells you quite a lot about, the state of Rugby League, really, and its public relations. I mean, on the other hand, it does tell you that there is lots of potential to convert new people, because if they don't know about you and they can find out about you, you never know, you might be able to get them coming down to the ground. But It's very sad to think that a lot of people in that part of Manchester don't know who Salford are, and it just shows how far we've fallen behind, you know, football and some other sports as well.
Mm, yeah, absolutely. And yeah, heaps of potential there to grow the sport. I wonder if you asked them the same question about the Sale Sharks who also...
Oh, that'd be very interesting, wouldn't it? Yes, yeah. I suspect more people would know about them than know about Salford, which would, you know, appalling really as far as I'm concerned. But I've actually asked Ryan if he could come on this podcast at some point in the future, which I think he'd be happy to do. But the problem is we record this on Tuesday mornings, and I think that's a training day for Salford. So we'd have to somehow try and get around that to get him on with us. But he's a very interesting guy. He actually he's actually forging a new career, a post-retirement career as an agent, and he's got quite a lot of women footballers on his books, you know, and some of whom play for England. Yep. And that gives him a pretty unique insight into how women's football has grown while rugby league hasn't really. Mm. So, yeah, you know, good luck to Ryan. He's obviously a very able and smart guy.
Mm, very ambitious too. I really like hearing those stories of players almost using the opportunity they have in their profile to go and attack some of these careers that will set them up.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
So,
yeah,
hats off to Ryan.
Very smart guy.
Hopefully we can get him on the podcast
well,
one day.
Well, Ryan, if you're watching, we'd love to have you on. Yeah, great stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, we touched on it a little bit earlier, but there's been some plans to redevelop the jungle out at Castleford. Now, the reported figure is it could be an investment of around 12.2 million pounds.
Yes.
How needed is this, Martin? And I guess, you know, what
well, it is.
This
I mean, you know, until a year ago, the two worst stadiums in Super League were Castleford and Wakefield, both in a poor state, really. Wakefield have now developed the new stand at Bellevue, and their stadium is looking, you know, unrecognisably better than it was not very long ago. So that leaves Castleford having to play catch-up as far as stadiums are concerned. But it now looks as though that is going to be approved. I think the full council has to give its final rubber stamp, but it looks guaranteed to happen, I'm glad to say. And you know, I'm very much looking forward to, you know, another couple of years' time when we can go down to Castleford and see the new stadium or the redeveloped stadium in all its glory. And good luck to the club, and good luck to everybody, all the Castleford supporters, who will no doubt enjoy the, you know, what the redeveloped stadium has to offer.
Mm. And it's been obviously recommended for approval, so we're hoping our council will tick this one off and push it through.
We certainly hope so. Well, I think there's no question about it. Mm. And it's being part of that cost will come from, I mean, they were going to move to a new stadium at Glasshouten, which is just off, I think it's Junction, one of the junctions of the M62. I can't remember precisely what number junction it is, but they were going to move there, but then they decided not to. But some of the money that had been allocated to develop a new stadium at Glasshouten is being transferred to the jungle, and that's how it will be financed. So good luck to Castleford. I hope it all goes well.
Mm, absolutely. We also had some other news in the past week or so that the Harry Sunderland Trophy is set to be replaced by the Rob Burrow Award starting from this season. What was your reaction to this news,
well,
Martin?
Obviously, everybody loves Rob Burrow, and it's great to see him being recognised. I'm delighted for Rob and for his family who've been so inspiring in the way that, you know, they've reacted to this dreadful illness that's afflicted Rob. And one surprise about the naming of that trophy, I'm slightly surprised in one sense that it's not being named the Burrow Sinfield Trophy, because, you know, Kevin Sinfield has just given so much incredible support to Rob and to the MND community more generally, that I thought his name might have been added to the trophy in the same way as you've got the Proven Summons Trophy in Australia. I mean, I don't know whether that was suggested. I don't know whether Kevin didn't want his name being added to Rob's for the trophy. So it's not probably not a an issue worth pursuing. But you know, I think both of those guys, Robin and Kevin, just deserve so much admiration for what they've done in the now more than 4 years since Rob was first diagnosed. And the only thing that slightly saddens me about it, though, is that the Harry Sunderland Trophy has been in existence and has been awarded every year since 1965. So that's, you know, that this would have been the 60th year of that award being made. And I was slightly disappointed to see that the announcement about Rob was made in a fairly cursory way, with a press release last week, and without sort of giving any sort of historical context to the Harry Sunderland Trophy. I mean, Harry was a great administrator, a promoter of the game, a journalist. He fulfilled a lot of different roles in rugby league. He's a Queenslander like you, of course. Mm. And was the was the secretary, I think, of the Queensland Rugby League during the First World War. He when the Queensland Rugby League ran out of money, he guaranteed the overdraft at the bank and so on. And and subsequently in his career, he managed Australian touring teams over here. He was a manager at Wigan for a year from 1938-39 and came back to Wigan for a period after the Second World War. And he played a significant role in the establishment of rugby league in France in the 1930s. So he's got a lot to commend him. But one of the unfortunate things, I suppose, is that there was an allegation made against him long after his death, unfortunately, that his transfer of Roy Francis from Wigan to Barrow in 1938 was based on the colour of Roy Francis's skin, because, of course, Roy was a great black player and subsequently black coach. And that came when Roy had an interview with the rugby league historian Robert Gate, I think in 1985, and Roy suggested that that might have been why he was transferred, but it didn't seem definitive to me. And the problem is, when you make these sorts of accusations against people who have died a long time ago, you could never contradict them, because they're not here to defend themselves. But I actually took the opportunity to check out the archive of Harry Sunderland, Harry Sunderland's writing, which is quite extensive, and it's held by the University of New South Wales. And it's you can't look at his writing and see any indication that there was racism in anything that he wrote, which doesn't mean he wasn't a racist, but it does mean that the circumstantial evidence doesn't seem to be there. But nonetheless, you know, and it's ironic in a way that Harry's son was a man called Sir Sidney Sunderland, who was an incredibly eminent Australian surgeon, and became much more famous in the world than Harry did, incidentally, and was a neurological surgeon. And he was actually called the father of modern nerve surgery. He was so eminent. And there is a body in the United States called the Sunderland Society, which runs symposia and annual sort of get-togethers to celebrate Sidney Sunderland's memory. So interesting in a way that Harry Sunderland's son specialised in a field of medicine that's quite closely related to what poor old Rob Burrow suffers from. So, you know, I think it might have been quite an interesting thing if somebody had drawn attention to that in, you know, when the RFL decided to change the title of the Man of the Match award in the grand final. Having said that, as I say, I'm delighted for Rob, and delighted, you know, that he's going to be recognised. I just wish it had been done in a slightly classier way.
Mm. Do you think they would have consulted any of the Sunderland family?
I don't know. I mean, that's an interesting question, and one that I'd like to know the answer to, because, I mean, Sydney Sunderland died in 1993. His son, I think, would now be pretty old as well, you know, and no doubt he might have grandchildren. I mean, that family seemed to be based in Melbourne in Australia. Mm. So, but who knows? But I think they should have done, because, you know, if you're gonna rename something, I think, you know, the idea of paying respect to the people whose name it did carry is an important element of that change.
Mm, yeah, absolutely. No, it's really nice to see Rob being recognised. I'm sure somewhere down the line we'll see some sort of award to recognise the great work Kevin Sinfield's done as well. So.
Can I just say as well, there's one thing that's quite interesting about the naming of the awards. One of the good things about the decision to name the Player of the Match award after Rob is that Rob played such a great role in grand finals. He won the Harry Sunderland Trophy twice, as did Kevin Sinfield, which is another reason why I think it'd be great to have the joint name there. Mm. Danny Maguire also won it twice, and this year Sinfield and Maguire will be there to present the Rob Burrow Award at the grand final. I think that's a wonderful thing. Mm. I'm a great believer in, you know, you name awards after people who have shown outstanding ability in a particular field that's linked to the award, and that's certainly true of Rob with the grand final. My favourite player of all time was Neil Fox, who scored 6,000 and odd, I can't remember the exact figure, but Neil scored 6,000 and odd points in his career, more points than any other player, and that figure will never be broken. Mm-hmm. You can take it from me. I would love to see the Rugby Football League or Super League creating a new award named after him for the player who scores most points in the season. Mm. Because that would very strongly link to the fact that Neil was the game's greatest ever point scorer. Neil is now, you know, into his 80s and still going strong. But, you know, if we're looking for new awards to name after eminent players, I think that would be a great one.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, we've also had some new sort of signing news over the last week or so. I think a day or so after we recorded last week's episode, it was announced that Huddersfield Giants have signed Tom Burgess for 3 years from 2025, which will likely see him finish his career in the Super League.
And Warrington said that, you know, they'd blown them out of the water. They would have liked to recruit him because, of course, Sam's the coach at Warrington.
Yep.
But Huddersfield blew them out of the water, they said, or words to that effect. Mm. Now, that's... You know, I can't quite get my head around the fact that you announce a signing a year in advance. Yeah. You know, Tom's going to play with South Sydney this year and, you know, be in Las Vegas, for the Las Vegas game. But he'll be joining Huddersfield in a year's time. One of my immediate reactions when I heard that news was, let's hope that Ian Watson is still the coach in a year's time, because, you know, obviously Ian will have played a very significant role in persuading Huddersfield to sign Tom. Mm. But that's on the basis that Ian will still be there next year. And if Huddersfield don't have a great season this year, and I hope they do, but if they don't, then you never quite know what might happen to Ian. So, you know, best of luck to Ian and best of luck to Huddersfield for a big year this year.
Mm. I'm trying to think of the benefits of announcing early. It might be to attract more players to the club going forward in future.
Well, it certainly might do. I mean, it certainly might if you've got any money left in the kitty, so to speak, to pay to anybody else. But certainly, you know, that's going to be quite a amazing thing for the Giants. They need to make an impact in Huddersfield. I mean, it's quite well known, isn't it, that Huddersfield don't get the support that they would like to get, and we'd all like to see them going much nearer to filling the John Smith Stadium. Mm. And maybe this is just putting out a sign to the people of Huddersfield that we're really serious about winning something in the coming years. And if they can do that, that's and draw more people in, then that's great, you know, because it really... I mean, I'm very much a rugby league, you know, protagonist, really, you might say. And I hate to see, you know, Huddersfield Town drawing 20,000 fans and Huddersfield Giants drawing 5,000. Mm. You know, I'd much prefer to see it the other way around. Sorry, Huddersfield Town fans. But, you know, I don't want to... I hate to see any situation in which rugby league comes second to football. But I'm, you know, obviously that's just because I'm a rugby league guy. But let's hope that Huddersfield's attendances can go on an upward curve from now on.
No, absolutely. I was surprised by the length of the deal. I think 3 years. I thought, oh, he's getting a bit on in his career.
Yes, but well, they've got Chris Hill, who's I think going to be the oldest player in Super League in 2024, and you know he's still there. So they obviously don't think that age is a barrier, do they?
That's it. Well, I looked though, and I was surprised to see that Tom's only 31. I
mean, yes.
You know,
he's been around such a long time.
That's right. I thought he would have been like 33 or you know, getting on to 34.
But yeah. So I think, you know, I think you can justify that 3 year deal. Yeah. Hopefully.
No, absolutely. Mm. And I wonder if Sam's a little bit hurt that he didn't show his loyalty to his brother, but money talks.
Well, I think the reason for that might be that I wouldn't be surprised if Warrington already have three marquee players, and Huddersfield perhaps might not have. So that might be what allowed Huddersfield to sign him and Warrington not to.
No, absolutely. Well, can't wait for next season to see how he goes. We also had news that Harry Newman's extended for a further 2 years with Leeds, which will be 2 years from next year. So that'll take him through to the end of 2026.
Yes.
Obviously a great retention, a young retention for
Leeds.
Oh,
gosh, yeah. A terrific player. Terrific player who's had very bad luck with injuries as well. So, you know, let's hope it's another injury-free year for Harry. Best of luck from both of us, I think, to him for a year that's, you know, free of any, you know, forget the hamstrings and everything else that's afflicted him, you know, in the last couple, 2 or 3 years. But and of course, by the time that deal ends, I mean, Harry, everybody knows that he's got ambitions to play in the NRL, and who can blame him? But by the time that contract ends, he would still be young enough to go and make a significant career over there if he wanted to. So that's entirely up to him. But I'm sure he is probably a Leeds marquee player as well. So, you know, he'll be on quite good money at Headingley, one would imagine.
No, absolutely. Because, 23 years old now. So people
coming
argue
to the
around,
peak.
Yeah, 26, 27, that's when you're hitting your prime.
Absolutely, coming to his peak.
Yeah, so that'll be great. But we've also had some signing news for London. Lee Kershaw's signed on, which is great relief for them.
I'm delighted for Lee, because I really rate Lee Kershaw. I think he played very well at Wakefield when Wakefield were in Super League. And he's a very chunky sort of a winger, quite powerfully built guy. Not dissimilar to Jermaine McGilvery, who's replaced him at Wakefield, in fact. But, you know, so I think he'll be a good recruit for London Broncos. And they probably need some more recruits, don't they? Because I mean, it's funny, isn't it, how teams that are probably, you know, destined to fight scrap at the bottom of Super League very often seem to be the ones that get the most injuries.
Yeah, just unfortunately.
It just seems to be a sort of hidden rule, really.
Well, I think their long-term injury casualty award now is at about five players or so. So, yeah.
Yeah, and the Place and Talons on Friday night, my goodness. Yeah.
Yeah.
Gosh.
So they've definitely drawn the short straw, which is not fair, but let's hope for an upset, I guess we could say.
Well, I don't think Saints fans will agree with that one, but yeah, London fans certainly would do, and it'll be interesting to see how it goes. But it's hard to see anything other than a, you know, probably a 40-point margin, really, in that game.
No, absolutely. Before we get into some of our news in Australia, do we want to briefly touch on some of the games that happened in the Challenge Cup over the weekend? I went out to Widnes to watch the Vikings play Doncaster.
And, yes.
Yeah, that was my first trip out to Widnes, and a good experience. But
it's a nice stadium, isn't it?
Yeah, they were just, I think Widnes sort of ran them off the park towards the end of the match.
But, yeah.
Yeah, it was good to see some quality football back on over the weekend.
In front of a pretty small crowd, unfortunately. Yes, I mean, there were 16 games at the weekend, and some of the good ones. The outstanding result, I think, was probably, well, there were two outstanding results in a way. Oldham winning at Barrow. I mean, Oldham are in League One this year, and that's the wrong league for them. They've recruited very well, and clearly they should be in the Championship, to be perfectly honest. I think they're going to have unfortunately, League One is going to be a one-horse race this year as far as Oldham are concerned. But, you know, great for them. They played very well to beat Barrow, who are not a bad side, on a fairly sticky pitch at Barrow on Saturday. And the other big result, I suppose, in a sense, was the amateur team York Acorn travelling the 400 miles to Cornwall, to Penryn, and beating Cornwall 18-10. You know, so that's a win by an amateur team over a League One team. And the fascinating thing is that in the fourth round, York Acorn will host an all-amateur tie against Wathbrow Hornets from Cumbria, right. You know, which is going to be quite interesting to see an amateur club in the fifth round of the Challenge Cup, you know, when, you know, it's really getting thinned out at that stage. So good luck to them. That's going to be an interesting game to see. There was a bit of, unfortunately, a bit of crowd trouble at Cornwall after the match ended, with a lot of, apparently, a few York Acorn fans abusing people, abusing the Cornwall players, and running onto the pitch and having, you know, a go at the referee and so on. And that sort of behaviour, I think, is very unfortunate. I don't know whether, I mean, I was surprised that any York Acorn fans were there at all, really, given the distance that they had to go. But, you know, we've got to put a stop to bad behaviour among rugby league fans. It's fairly straightforward, isn't it? We've got to stop that, and we've got to make people behave more responsibly. Maybe the York Acorn fans had been having a bit too much to drink on the long journey down there, you know, which you could hardly blame them for having a few beers, could you, on that sort of a trip? But they've got to, you know, everybody has got to be behaviour that you might have seen some years ago isn't good enough today. That's the whole point. And particularly in Cornwall, you know, we're trying to develop this club in Cornwall. It's great to see a team in Cornwall playing rugby league, but we don't want their fans to witness boorish behaviour from Northern rugby league fans, do we?
No, absolutely. And, you know, we've seen over the last week the RFL's, you know, launched their campaign trying to encourage people to behave at games, respect the officials, the players, the opposition fans. And we want to make it a family environment to try and attract as many people as we can to our games.
We certainly do,
Save all the foolishness for, you know, when you're at the pub after the game. Or, I mean, pubs might not like me saying that, but...
No, I'm sure they wouldn't.
Save it for when you get off the grounds. And, yeah, treat everyone with respect, obviously. Shouldn't have to be said, but... Yes.
Not at all. No, no.
Now, we've also...
Just a quick one. On the fourth round will be played on the weekend of February the 24th, 25th. So not this weekend, but the following weekend. Mm-hmm. And the pick of the ties is probably Bradford Bulls versus Widnes Vikings. You know, you've seen Widnes now. And both those teams have got a tremendous history of winning the Challenge Cup. Mm. You know, when there were much bigger teams than they are today, and you know, that's going to be a game worth seeing. As is the all amateur tie, and Hammersmith Hills Hoist, the surviving London amateur team, they will visit Halifax Panthers. So that's going to be an interesting game to see. And then the fourth amateur team, Hunslet Amateur Rugby League Club, they will visit Wakefield Trinity. So that's quite a big ask for them, isn't it? Yeah. But, you know, there are going to be some really interesting matches and in the fourth round, I think.
No, absolutely. And we've been able to get a bit of a glimpse of what we can expect from some of those championship sides ahead of this season. I was going to ask you, in terms of the championship, does it feel like it's a one-horse race with Wakefield right out
it
in front?
It does a bit, yes. To be perfect, I mean, it's a bit unfortunate, isn't it, that... There are some teams that have ended up in the wrong division. I think Wakefield ideally would still be in Super League. They've got a Super League set up. London probably will struggle to cope with being in Super League, especially with this grading situation that means that they're going to come down come what may. I think London would benefit from still being in the Championship, and clearly Oldham ought to be in the Championship as well. You know, there's a danger of it being a one-horse race in both the Championship and League One this year, which is always a bit unfortunate, really. But, you know, we'll see how it works out. Maybe, you never know, things could go wrong for Wakefield, things could go wrong for Oldham.
That's right.
But it's hard to see those things happening.
And Toulouse are pretty much bringing back much of the same squad from last year, so who knows, they could potentially cause an upset.
Well, maybe, but, you know, I don't think Toulouse's squad is going to be as strong as all that, to be honest. And, you know, that's a bit unfortunate. But, you know, Wakefield looked to be by far the strongest side. But, of course, winning the championship doesn't matter now in terms of where you end up in 2025. It's right. your grading that counts. Mm. So, you know, it would be perfectly possible for a team to win the championship grand final and not end up in Super League next year. Mm. That's the problem, isn't it?
Yep.
You know, I think everybody must be hoping that... because Wakefield look very well set in the grading scores. And, you know, a lot of people must be hoping that Wakefield do win the championship grand final so they don't have the embarrassment of a team winning that competition and then not being promoted.
Mm, yeah, absolutely. Now, we'll move on to, I guess, some other English Rugby League related news because it's World Club Challenge related. It's been announced that Jerome Luai will not play in the World Club Challenge against Wigan.
Yes.
He's still recovering from that shoulder injury he sustained at the end of last year. I think he's going to travel over with the side, but Ivan said that he's just not ready yet. So,
no.
Yeah, what's your reaction to this news? Is that a plus for Wigan?
Well, I suppose it probably is. But really, you know, it's Nathan Cleary who controls the Penrith side. It would have been probably better for Wigan if Nathan had been the player sure, who wasn't going to be coming.
Yeah.
I mean, Jerome Luai is a great player, but... I'm fairly sure that whoever plays alongside Nathan, you know, it'll be a formidable Penrith side. So I wouldn't bank too much if I were Wigan on the fact that Jerome not being there means that they're in a much better position to win the game. It's going to be hard work. It's going to be applying all the skill that's in their side, the pace and power and so on. And it's going to be a very, very tight game. I'm so looking forward to it, I've got to say.
No, absolutely.
But I think Wigan, you know, are going to be prepared for Penrith no matter what.
Mm, no, absolutely. And they've got a few familiar faces that could fill that role. Obviously, Jack Cogger, who came in the second half of the grand final and played a really good game once he got on the pitch. And Brad Schneider as well, obviously very familiar with their Hull KR fans.
My nightmare for this game, and Wigan fans might want to share this, is... it goes into golden point time and Brad Schneider kicks the winning field goal, you know, because he kicked a few last year for Hull KR, didn't he? And I think he's a very good player. So, you know, if he comes into the side, certainly Penrith have got a double threat when it comes to kicking field goals, haven't they?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, that we'll see what happens there, of course.
Now it's shaping up to be one hell of a clash. We also had some controversial news over the last week. Broncos captain Adam Reynolds and our vice captain Pat Carrigan have been filmed in a drunken
a bit of a scuffle.
Public scuffle.
Yeah.
It didn't look like there was any punches thrown, but they were definitely having a bit of a
bit
wrestle.
Bit of a wrestle, yeah. Well, they said it was just a friendly sort of wrestle that got out of hand a bit.
Yeah.
I mean, well, who knows?
That's right.
But I'm afraid that's what boozing does for you, doesn't it?
Mm.
It you know, if you're not careful, you have a few too many to drink and then somebody says something to you, you react to it,
yep.
And before you know it, you're both rolling on the floor.
Mm.
It's very undignified, but I don't think it should be taken too seriously, to be honest.
I'd just say, look, they're just doing some extra wrestling training ahead of the season.
That's right.
If anything, that's going to make them...
And who came out on top? Who won it, I wonder?
It's hard to see. But I thought, oh, Adam Reynolds, he's a bit game taking on one of our front rowers.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
So, yeah, hopefully.
But they do take this sort of thing very seriously now in Australia, don't they? It's as though they're frightened to see that sort of, you know, boys being a bit foolish, you know, letting their hair down, so to speak.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe they ought to back off a bit. Who knows?
Yeah, the media scrutiny down there is certainly another level.
Intense.
And you hear that from a lot of players that do come over here. They say that they appreciate not having the spotlight always on.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, we don't try to, you know, chase them for every little minor indiscretion that they might engage in and condemn them, you know, for the rest of their lives for that sort of thing.
No, absolutely. Looking ahead to this weekend, Martin, I'll run through the games quickly with you, mate, just to get your picks. I'm putting you on the spot here a little bit. But obviously, we've got first match, Hull KR taking on FC. Who's your pick in this one?
Well, I think you would have to go for Hull KR, you know, particularly after they played so well last year. Hull finished 10th in Super League in 2023. It's really vital for them that they improve dramatically on that. I'd like to see Hull win in front of their own fans, because I think that would be a massive boost for them. And, you know, the ideal result for me is a very late win for Hull FC, but I suspect that Hull KR will be a bit too strong for them.
Yeah, I would have picked KR as well. Leeds versus Salford, who do you have here?
Well, I can only imagine Leeds winning this game. I think Salford have obviously weakened during the off-season with losing Brody Croft and Andy Akers to Leeds, and it's going to be very interesting to see how those two players play against their old club.
No. Good little side story there heading into that one. That'll be interesting to
Absolutely,
see.
Absolutely, yes.
We have Saints taking on the Broncos. We'll touch on this one.
Oh, 40-odd points, yeah. Saints to win by, I think, at the very least. And, you know, I really fear for this game that it could be an extraordinarily one-sided match. And, you know, I'd love to see London prove me wrong and get near to St Helens, because obviously we'd like to see a close game, but it's very hard to imagine it, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And Lee taking on the Giants.
Well, you would imagine Lee would win this game, wouldn't you? Because they're going to kick on from next year. But the really interesting thing for me is to see how Matt Moylan combines with Lachlan Lamb at halfback. And that's going to be very, very interesting. Huddersfield, they've got, you know, a new halfback as well. In Adam Clune, the ex-Newcastle and St George player. And I think he's a very intelligent guy, very intelligent player. I've liked him quite a long time. And, you know, I think he could do quite a good job combining with Tuilola here. So I think that game is going to be well worth watching. And here's a question for you, Jake. Three games all being played at the same time. Which of those three games would you most like to watch?
Oh... So we're looking at Leeds, Saints.
Leeds versus Salford, St Helens versus London, and Lee versus Huddersfield.
I'm going to have to say, based on what I expect to be the most competitive matchup, would have to be Lee versus Giants.
Me too. Yes. Yeah.
I am a fan of the way Lee attacks. I like the way John Asiata plays as a ball player through the middle.
Yes,
I think
that's
right. Very silky attack. So I enjoy watching the Leopards play, I must admit. So yeah, I'll probably watch that match, but. Yeah, Leeds, Salford. I'd love to see Brody Croft in new colours too, so...
Absolutely.
But yeah, I think I'll be picking Lee. And again, we'll harp on it again. Please, Sky or Super League, can we have our games staggered so we can watch all of them live?
Absolutely. crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Moving on, we have Cass taking on Wigan. Who are you picking in this one?
Oh, gosh. You've got to go with Wigan, haven't you?
Yeah.
You know, Castleford have completely redone their... squad over the close season. I mean, their numbers 1-6 are all totally different players to what they were last year. One interesting little element of this, by the way, is Danny Richardson is coming back into the squad with a number 6 shirt after having been out for such a long time with a serious injury. I hope he goes well if he's picked. I really do. I hate to see players suffering long-term injuries, but I always hope when they come back that they get a break and they don't get any further injuries. And my best wishes to Danny if he plays in that game, but he couldn't have chosen a harder game to come back in if he does get selected. So I think Wigan will win by about 20 or 30 points actually in that game.
Yeah, absolutely. And then we have Catalans taking on Warrington.
In many ways, this is the most interesting game of the weekend, you know, aside from the Hull derby. Sam Burgess's first game in charge. Catalans have made wholesale changes to their squad, and they might need to take some time bedding in, I would have thought. So this is the game that I'm most uncertain about the result of, really. You know, I think Warrington have got quite a decent record of winning games at the Stade Gilbert Brutus. And I just have a feeling that they might sneak it. I think they've had a very good pre-season. I know they lost to Lee in a pre-season game, but as I've said many times before, pre-season results are not to be relied on. And I think there's a strong spirit. One thing that Sam has done at Warrington is imbue them with a very strong sense of togetherness, a strong team spirit. And hopefully that might carry them across the line at Catalans.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot to watch out for this weekend, Martin. But before we wrap up today, is there anything else you would like to touch
on? Well, one final thing, which I intended to mention earlier. The Rugby Football League are hoping for a record turnout of fans for a six-game opening weekend of Super League. Mm-hmm. The record as it stands is 69,000, if I can see it somewhere. Yes, 69,499, which was recorded in 2004. It's going to start with almost a 20,000 crowd at Hull on Thursday. And if all the other games can average 10,000 each, then that record will be beaten. So it's going to be an interesting one to watch for. And interestingly, back in 2004, the biggest game of the weekend was 17,267 who turned up to watch Bradford Bulls against Wigan when Bradford Bulls were still a Super League club. And that shows what we're missing by not having Bradford in Super League, in my view. I don't think they'd get crowds like that, but you know, they're potentially a very big crowd-pulling club of Bradford, and it's been such a tragedy to see the difficulties that they've had over the years since that 2004 game. So let's hope it does happen. Let's hope we do have a new record to celebrate, Jake, and we'll all enjoy it, I'm sure.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's a very exciting weekend ahead. There's almost too much football to watch, as you and I mentioned before.
Yes, there is. Podcast, yes, because all the Australian pre-season challenge games will be on Sky over the weekend. I think there's one game on Thursday, the Bulldogs against the Storm. Then it's the All Stars game on Friday, isn't it? At Queensland Country Bank Stadium in Townsville, your stomping ground, or not quite, but you know that part of the world, don't you? And and then four games on Saturday, and I think three is it on Sunday. So you know, if you want to watch rugby league this weekend, you don't need to do anything else. Your desires can be fully satisfied.
All right, Martin. Let's also remind our viewers and listeners, if you do want to get yourself a subscription to League Express, head along to www.totalrl.com/shop. Don't forget
and get
to
this week's edition, because it's a preview of the season, four-page pull-out preview with all the information that you need to enjoy rugby league in 2024.
Absolutely, mate. All right, we'll be back next week to wrap up all the weekend's results. Take care out there, guys, and we'll do it again next week, Martin.
Great stuff, Jake. Thanks a lot. Cheers, mate.